This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to New York, from the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the People Speak Radio at Pal Talk and BBS Radio. We're very honored tonight to have Aaron Watata, and he has another speaking engagement, so he'll be leaving us about 10 minutes to the hour. So we're going to be going right into our introduction. Aaron, could you please say hello to our listeners? And we are really honored to have you with us. As far as I'm concerned, Aaron, you're a hero. You really are, and I have my reasons why, and I will go into them as we talk. Could you say hello to everybody, and then perhaps you can tell us exactly what the current charges you're facing, Aaron, are?
Sure, Beth. Mine. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me on. Hello, everyone. Currently, I'm facing the 4 counts of conduct unbecoming based upon the speeches or statements that I made publicly or in interviews, and also that one charge of missing troop movement. And for all those counts or specifications, I face a maximum of 6 years in prison and also a dishonorable discharge.
Wow, that's a pretty hefty set of stuff they've got going your way. How are you feeling, and how are you handling this emotionally thus far?
I think that people will recognize this as an act of not only conscience but duty as well. And I think, you know, regardless of whether people agree or disagree, when somebody does something based upon what they feel is right morally within their conscience and also based upon what they are supposed to do as a decent human being, I think that whatever happens, you are you can accept that. As an acceptable consequence to the actions that you've taken. And so at this point, I'm at peace with myself, and I feel fine.
Let me ask you something, Aaron. Your statements are that you believe that this is an illegal war. What are you basing this assessment on?
Well, there's numerous things. I think what you have to remember is that we have people within our government who brought us into this war based on false pretenses, and it was a very elaborate deception in order to gain public support and the authorization from the other branch of government, Congress, because without it, they would not have had this war of choice, this war of aggression, this war for corporate profits, whatever you want to call it, not a war based out of necessity at all, in any sense. And the most dangerous thing for me, and I think anybody out there, was when you have people within our own government who do this, who basically defraud the American people, who commit a crime, and they are not held accountable to it. They are not punished for it. They will feel entitled to do it again and again and again. And as you can see, there's already talk of invading or attacking Iran in the very near future. And we can see the very same patterns again, this propaganda coming out, or this rhetoric that Iran is an imminent danger and we need to attack immediately. And what's going to happen is that this will spark a spiral of violence and retribution that has the opportunity to bring us into, you know, perpetual war for a long time, and that can have very drastic effects on all of us.
You know, this is a brave step, and I have to tell you, it's a very courageous step that you've taken based on your moral position, Aaron. Let me ask you, how does it feel being called a traitor? A lot of people will call you anti-American. A lot of people will say that you deserve to be in jail. How does that feel after being in the military as long as you have been?
Well, you know, everybody, or I think people who say those things are going off of emotion, and obviously they have a bias, feeling very loyal themselves, I guess, to either the military as an institution or to the administration. And I simply just have to ask these people, what am I being disloyal to? I certainly think that, and I know that when anybody joins the military, we swear an oath to obey the Constitution. And this did, of course, say that they will obey the president and those appointed over them. But that is not the oath of a commissioned officer. The officer swears no oath or fealty to the president or any members of Congress or the administration, swears no loyalty to the Army or the military. We say that we will protect and defend the Constitution, and that means all the principles and the promises of the Constitution and the safety and the welfare, general safety and the welfare of all Americans. And I just have to say that with the release of that National Intelligence Estimate last year, it said by our own domestic intelligence agencies that the occupation of Iraq was a cause célèbre for Islamic extremists and terrorism the worldwide. So from that I take our presence in Iraq is making America less safe as opposed to protecting Americans. What are we doing in Iraq? I have no idea.
I don't think our president has any ideas of his last presentation on 60 Minutes on television last week. I don't think he has an idea why we're there.
Right. And I think people have to remember that this country was founded by traitors, people who were loyal subjects in one sense or one day, and the very next day they were
heroes.
Condemned by the British government to be hung on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, people have to look at, well, what am I being disloyal to? Is it the president? Well, I don't swear any loyalty to the president. It's to the people. And we have people within our administration who numerous times have violated the law, whether it be international or federal law or constitutional powers. And they are doing this with impunity, and they are doing it over and over again at the detriment to the American people. What I'm doing is saying that, hey, we just need to hold our leaders accountable. We need to stop this war that is illegal and immoral and is hurting our image around the world. It is making America less safe, and it is making the day-to-day lives of Iraqis horrible, terrible.
Aaron, when did you start to realize that this was how you felt? Based upon, and where did you get your information? Was it just through the standard media? And, is this just something that you started to understand and awoke to suddenly, or has this been a process for you?
Well, the information, certainly the mainstream media's coverage of the war and a lot of things, current events and things that have been going on within our country has been very inadequate. And I think that you have to dig for it, but it's there. You just have to have the willingness to find it.
Well, don't you have an additional opportunity being in the military and hearing directly from combatants and people coming back from Iraq, soldiers coming back?
You do, certainly, but you also get some biased accounts because, admittedly, there are units that go there, but they will be in a certain pocket within Iraq in which they will only see the events around them and believe that the whole country is like that. They will believe that, things aren't that great, but, because we are doing something for reconstruction, because we're passing out soccer balls here and it's relatively stable, well, that's how everything else is in the country, and why is the media giving us a bad rap? It's certainly coming out. It is very inadequate. It relies a lot on independent and foreign journalists to cover the news in Iraq when they can get out there and it's safe. A lot of it's coming out from government reports, non-governmental organizations, coming out from Iraqis themselves, and yes, coming back from the veterans who are seeing firsthand the immorality of the whole occupation. And it's just taking all of this together and formulating a picture and a conclusion over it. And that really is the duty of an officer. And, I'm not exposed. If anything, in the military, we are exposed to less than what average Americans are exposed to. You go to any magazine stand on a military base, and you will see no Time, Newsweek, U.S. News and World Report.
Really?
Right. You see all your basic hobby magazines and your... Nothing with any substance, nothing that causes any thought or anything. You have to go out there and get your own subscriptions. But that's the prevailing attitude. They do not want soldiers to think. Unfortunately, they didn't put that restriction on the library, however they may in the near future. But like as I said before, that is the duty of an officer and a soldier to go out there. What is the law? What are the Geneva Conventions? What is the United Nations Charter? What is the Army's Law of Land Warfare? And even I don't know the whole thing, the whole book, FM-22. But it is certainly our responsibility. And I felt, as I was trained, that when you're about to embark on a mission, and as an officer in a certain profession, you know all you can about that profession. You know all you can about that mission because you owe it to your troops, you owe it to yourself, you owe it to the unit. And that's what I did. I basically went out there, I went to the library, I surfed the internet, and I tried to find everything I could know, sifting through, of course, all the facts, about the history, the culture, the background of Iraq, the current events on the ground, the current conduct of the military on the ground, the past conduct, what had got us into the war in the first place, what was the current policy, the rules of engagement. And when reading about all these things, I had no doubt in my mind. I was very convinced that what we were doing over there and why we had gotten there in the first place was extremely illegal and immoral.
Well, I have to agree with you. I don't believe in this war. I never have. I don't believe in any war, but I especially don't believe in this war. I believe that it was based on... And our president has basically said that we went there on public national television. His statement was that we went there under erroneous intelligence information. And in the same speech, within less than probably a minute and a half, he then went on to say that given the circumstances and looking back, we would have gone there anyway. Well, he would have gone there, but he didn't offer the opportunity for anybody in this country to decide if we would have gone there.
Right. Well, I mean, you have to remember the Downing Street memos, which has been publicized a lot in the UK, but not as much in America.
Mm-hmm.
And the Downing Street memos is basically back in 2002 when President Bush and Prime Minister Blair met together. They had already established that they were going to invade and topple the Saddam Hussein regime,
mm-hmm.
and that there were no justifications for doing it, so they needed to fabricate the justifications. And yes, as you said,
we did a show, as a matter of fact, on the Downing Street memos earlier in the year.
So, yeah, and you know, the president did come out and say, well, yes, it was bad intelligence, and it was his responsibility and for following that intelligence, but after he said that, he implied, basically, that it was the fault of the CIA and the intelligence analysts and officers.
Shirking the blame.
Right, and they came back pretty strong. You know, you have gentlemen like Tyler Drumheller and Paul Pillar, Karen Kutowski, a couple of other intelligence analysts and officers came out. Paul Pillar was the head of Mideast intelligence for the CIA, and he came out and publicly stated that it was not bad intelligence, it was manipulated intelligence. And many other people, even including Richard Clark, who used to be the counterterrorism czar in the administration, came out and said they told the administration many times that there was no WMD, there were no ties to Al-Qaeda 9/11, and they came back and said, that is not what we want to hear, you redo these reports, tell us what we want to hear. And after so much time, after they were getting rid of people left and right who disagreed with them, the others who were left just said, fine, whatever you want to hear, we will write. And of course, as you said, this was all carefully propagandized by the White House Iraq group, by many within the State Department, many within the White House, and the neoconservatives. I mean, they were pushing for war and creating justifications as they went along.
Well, they've been pushing for this war for over almost 20 years now, so this is not something that was unexpected. It's certainly, I think it's actually kind of comical the way they introduced it, but I guess you had to be following it in order to understand that. We have currently with us Lieutenant Aaron Wittada, and we'll be taking audience questions. So for those of you that would like to talk to Aaron and ask him a brief question, you can call toll-free 877-876-5227. If you're outside the United States, such as in Canada, 888-810-8322. Once again, U.S., toll-free 877-876-5227, and outside of the U.S., 888-810-8322. Now, we're not going to be taking a break, Erin, because you do have to leave a little bit early. I hope that's not going to be too much, too rough on you. We'd like to be able to... Let me ask you. Lieutenant Colonel John Head said that whether this war is lawful or not is not going to be something that you're going to be able to use in a military court. And then later, he also says that what he said was that there are limits to the free speech of military personnel. Now, obviously, I can understand if this was something that compromised our security or leaking classified information, but they're talking about you giving a press conference and your refusal. Now, we do have a caller, and caller, if you'll wait for just a couple of minutes, I'll bring you on as soon as Erin is done. What does that mean? We have limits to free speech. Where does it say that in our Constitution, Erin?
It doesn't. The military is making up the laws and goes along in order to protect the administration, in order to protect their jobs and their positions, and they do not want anything to come of light that would challenge the policy, because as you know, that would have drastic ramifications, or huge ramifications in terms of ending this war. And what they are doing is essentially saying that I do not have the same free speech rights as those in the civilian world, because I guess they do not want to have anything, as I said, presented in a court of law that could challenge the policy.
Given this this statement, let me just ask you briefly before we bring our caller on. Do you think that they're going to make an example of you, Erin, given the circumstances? I mean, in a way, they almost have to. And I mean, I know from everything that I've been told about the way the military court system works, especially in a case like this, they're going to come down hard. This is actually, like your lawyer said, this is a disciplinary system, not a justice system. And is that fair? Isn't that stripping you of your constitutional rights?
Well, of course, I do think that they are trying to set an example. And for them, they may feel like they have no other alternative. We have tried many times to come at some kind of resolution short of a full-blown public court-martial. But in essence, this is what they wanted. I mean, they are creating the story by everything that they do, by continuing this this affair. Mm-hmm. And I think that they are making a big mistake by trying to make an example, because what they're going to do is they'll set their example and they'll send their message. But that message is that when you join the military or when you are in the military, it doesn't matter what your conscience says or what your morality says, you are going to do what you're told or else. And so many people are going to say, to hell with this. I'm just going to go AWOL. I'm not going to stand up for what I believe is right. Many people are going to do opposite of what their conscience dictates, and they're going to regret it for a long time, if not the rest of their life. And you have many people who will not join the military now who may have done so otherwise, and that will hurt recruitment as well. And I think that it's very tragic that Lieutenant Colonel Head is not going to, has already predetermined that he will not allow any witnesses or evidence to testify to the legality of the war. They used the same arguments back in Vietnam, and there was no federal, or civilian, or military court that debated or challenged the policy. And they will not challenge the policy in this war either, and neither will Congress challenge it, and neither will any other court of law. And it will be very tragic, because Lieutenant Colonel Head may have children who join the military 30 years from now, and we may have another president at that time who does the same thing, because there was no lesson learned. There were no statesmen or women who were held accountable for their actions.
Exactly. Exactly. Caller, thank you for being so patient with us. Could you please give us your first name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for Erin?
Well, thank you, Vixie. I appreciate you hosting the show. Erin, this is Gary Baumgarten. I'm the news and programming director at PAL Talk, and I want to first thank you for coming on the program. It was very kind of you to do this. I've noticed that in the beginning of the show, You said that the American revolutionaries were considered at one point to be traitors, and I just was wondering whether you consider yourself a traitor, and I'll hang up and listen on the program. And thanks again for joining us.
No, I think that I've done exactly what my oath dictates, and that is to protect the Constitution against those who threaten it. And as you know, we have those within our administration who are threatening our civil liberties, who are violating the Fourth Amendment, the First Amendment, numerous laws that are underneath the Constitution, not to mention the international laws barring wars of aggression and the Geneva Conventions, and also to protect the welfare and the safety of American people. And again, we have an administration who is threatening all of those things, the safety and the welfare, and especially by the conduct and continuation of this war. So I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to do as an officer. Unfortunately, it's because of the powers that be, what I'm standing up for doesn't necessarily agree with them. And of course, they do not want to have anybody, be it an officer or a civilian, challenge what they're doing, whether it's legal or not. So they're going to try to silence that voice of opposition.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Aaron. We have another caller. Caller, if you could give us your first name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for Aaron. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, thank you. My name is Mike from California, and my question for Aaron is, does the trial of Pablo Paredes, I don't believe he was an officer, but he refused to board a ship for Iraq, does his case set a precedent or in any way helpful to your own case? Thank you.
No, it does not. Certainly, we will use it during the sentencing phase, but he was convicted, so it's not going to have any precedence for the trial phase in which, you know, they determine whether to convict or acquit. And certainly, the Army will argue, the prosecutors will argue, that every case is different, every case is handled on an individual basis, and they will even probably argue that because Lieutenant Watada is an officer, he should be punished more harshly.
Well, obviously, thank you, caller, for calling in, and obviously you are fully prepared as I believe, and I guess you're probably thinking the same way, Aaron, that you're going to be made an example of, and you are obviously prepared to do the time. But during your, let me ask you something. During your press conference when you refused deployment, you had spoken about the fact that you believe that many more soldiers would actively.
Yeah, I was wondering, even after your trial, if.
Excuse me. Hello, caller. I guess we have another caller. Could you give us your name and where you're calling from, caller, and a brief question?
Yes, I did.
Your name, please?
Matt.
Hi, Matt. You have a question for Aaron?
Yes, I do.
Go right ahead. Matt, are you with us?
Yeah.
I was wondering. You can ask your question.
I was wondering, even after your trial, are you scared that there'll be repercussions from the government? And if so, will that quiet you up from talking out?
I'm sure that, you know, there are probably blacklists out there, although there's nothing that I could ever prove unless there's a string of evidence that I can point to. But that's not something that I'm especially thinking about right now. I think my thoughts are more focused on the trial and also getting the word out to the American people and trying to raise awareness, not simply just for my case, but for, you know, those 150,000 soldiers that are over there in Iraq. And the American people have that power to end this war and to end the killing of Iraqis and Americans if they so choose. But the people have to be willing to do so and sacrifice something for that.
Thank you, Matt, very much for calling in. As I was saying, Aaron, my concern was some statements that you had made about the families of soldiers and that many times soldiers would like to probably be able to speak out. But due to the fact that they have to feed their families and they have to survive, my question is there some kind of repercussion to the families? I mean, if you refuse, obviously you're a single man, if I'm not mistaken. And but for those GIs and military personnel that have families, Are they punished somehow? Or is there a pay cut, or how does that work?
Well, right. For a lot of these military families, the husband may be the primary breadwinner. If it is a husband who is in the military and he has a wife and child as dependents, and a lot of times the punishment is to withhold all pay and allowances from that soldier. The military may take into effect that soldier has a family, or they may not. I mean, they may strip all pay and allowances, including the allowance for housing and the allowance for food. Mm-hmm. And so if they wanted to be especially punitive, they could do that. And the family would go without...
So they have the capability of doing that. It isn't something that they would... that's still legal.
Is it illegal? No, of course not. Military
really?
Those allowances are all privileges, as I guess the military calls it, and they can withhold it at any point.
I see.
But certainly, I think, whether they would do it or not, I don't know. But certainly a soldier who may be thinking about following his conscience has to take that into account, that his family will not have income, his family may not have a house, his family may not have health benefits. And how long will he be in prison? I don't know, 2 or 3 years, and he'll have a dishonorable discharge. It may be very, very difficult for him to find a job, especially if he has limited skills and education. And family support from outside his immediate family. Those are the things that many soldiers take into account if they had to make this difficult choice. This is the dilemma that the American people are putting the soldiers in. There's a lot of moral and legal ambiguity around this war if soldier hasn't already predetermined this. And as I said, you put them in a very difficult position. We should not be putting service members in this position at all.
And the families, absolutely, I agree with you. We have another caller. Caller, can you give us your first name, where you're calling from, and your brief question for Aaron?
My name is Gene from North Carolina. Can you hear me?
Yeah, Gene, we can hear you. Go right ahead, hon.
All right. Political activist myself, I consider what you've done to be perfectly legal, and I have a great deal of respect for you. I've been calling for citizens to fly the American flag upside down as a signal of emergency and dire distress for the very same reason that you are facing trial. How do you feel about that?
I think that's a good first step. We all have to ask ourselves and evaluate what it is that's wrong with our country, especially this war. And if you don't know, that's no excuse. There's no excuse for sitting on the fence anymore, not with what we've seen in the past 6 years. You have to, if you don't know, then educate yourself and gain that knowledge and be willing to accept beyond what you only want to believe. And obviously we believe in the same things. But then you have to ask yourself, what are you willing to sacrifice? A lot of people say, I don't like Bush and I don't like this war, and that's it, period. And then they go back to their job or they go back to watching TV. And it has to be more than that. We all, as Americans, have this civic responsibility, and especially in a democracy, a government by the people. We all have this responsibility to do whatever it takes to ensure our government is doing the right thing. And many Americans, whether it's apathy or cynicism, have relinquished this responsibility. And that's one of the primary reasons I'm here today. If the people we elected were doing the right thing, then I wouldn't be here today. If the people were doing the right thing and out in the streets and protesting and forcing their elected representatives and officials to do the right thing, I wouldn't have to have done what I did. But we don't have that in our country.
Terrence, being on the inside looking out, on the military inside, what do you feel about that the Democratic Party is going to be able to do when they talk about withdrawal or bringing our troops home? Do you think that's even a possibility? I mean, look what our president, our government is saying, we're going to withdraw. The people in the United States are saying we want to withdraw. Our president says, I'm not listening to anybody. I don't want to withdraw. Is it even possible to withdraw at this point?
It's not possible unless the politicians hear the voice of the people. Politicians are going to do whatever they think is politically acceptable, and that includes keeping the soldiers in Iraq I don't know until the president, until President Bush leaves office. I don't know what their political strategy is if the people are not out there calling for the immediate withdrawal or the, you know, near withdrawal. The people have to be calling the representatives. They have to be visiting the representatives. They have to be protesting out on the streets at every available opportunity. They have to be educating their fellow citizens on what's really going on over there, and that includes their representatives. But you don't have that. You have a very fringe segment of society that is always out there protesting. You have this, probably the same people who call the representatives every day, and the vast majority, that other 250 million, not excluding, you know, the 30% who will support the policies no matter what, you have hundreds of millions of people who are not doing anything. And unless the representatives hear this overwhelming call for withdrawal, they're going to do what they think is politically acceptable, what they think they can politically get away with.
It's fascinating. I believe we have another caller. Caller, can you please give us your first name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for our guest, Aaron?
Yes, this is Mike calling from Nebraska. I have a question. It's kind of a three-part, but it's real short. I'm curious. I caught the end of this, so I don't know everything that you've talked about already. My first question, what are you being charged with? You know, who ordered your Article 32 hearing, or you are offered an Article 15? You know, exactly how did this thing progress? And I'd like you to discuss that a little bit, if you could.
I can go briefly through it. For more detail, go to this website set up by organizers and supporters called thankyoult.org. There's a timeline and there's a lot of background on there. Basically, I was charged with one count of missing movement for refusing deployment to Iraq, and for four counts of conduct on becoming an officer for the speeches, statements, and interviews that I did. The Article 32 was back in August. The recommendation was for a general court-martial on all charges, which at that time also included two counts of contempt against officials. In November, they dropped two charges of contempt and went ahead with a general court-martial on the other five charges, the conduct on becoming impeachment. And the pretrial was on January 4th, in which we presented our motions. The judge, I think it was last week, denied all of our motions, basically said that this will be a non-trial. There will be no witnesses or evidence allowed to question the war or its policies. And that's basically it.
Am I on?
A disciplinary hearing.
Well, thank you, Aaron. Yes, caller, you're on.
Oh.
Could you give us your name and where you're calling from? And a brief question for our guest, Aaron Watada.
This is Jesse in Washington. I go under Levy, 001 under Pal Talk.
Hello, Levy. How are you?
How are you?
Good.
Mr. I applaud you. I think you're very brave for what you're doing. It's a shame that the American people, I think the American people are the only people that have a voice for our soldiers, and I think we're not doing that, so I apologize for that, for one. But I had a question for you. Have you tried to talk to General Batiste and also Senator Biden? Have you heard that Senator Biden has had Monday afternoon hearings on Monday afternoon about their oversight hearings for quite a while now, and there's been a lot of whistleblowers talking about what Rumsfeld did, what Halliburton's been doing. Batiste was on there, and a lot of them said that there was a lot of sealed documents, that they can't talk much about it until them documents are unsealed, and that the administration is keeping these sealed. Have you talked to them, too, to maybe try to help you out to help you with your situation, if it's any possibility?
Thank you, Levy.
Thank
we've
you.
We've talked to, including my parents and other supporters in Hawaii and Washington State, have talked to several politicians, including many in the Out of Iraq caucus, asking them for their help to get involved, you know, to petition the military or to hold hearings based upon the illegality of the war in order to support my case. And they have all walked the, you know, walked a very thin line, have not wanted to get involved, because, as I, you have to remember that there's this stigma about refusing orders in the military, that it is just not acceptable under any reasons, any rationale. Of course, we all remember that if...
But, Aaron, is that really true? Is it don't soldiers have the right to question what they believe to be an illegal command?
Right. Under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, every single service member has a right to refuse unlawful orders.
Until you do it.
That's why it's a travesty of justice that they will not allow any witnesses or evidence to testify on my behalf to that fact. And, you know, what they are doing is they're just skirting around the issue, in essence. The order was not just to get on the plane. The order was to get on the plane to conduct combat operations in Iraq. Combat operations as a policy and a rule and rules of engagement are illegal as they stand right now. But they do not want to discuss this. And they do not want to give me due process in a court of law. You know, if they go on this
basis... And basically, if they get away with this, then it is another travesty against the constitutional rights of even our military personnel.
Exactly. And that's not to mention that we treat our military like indentured servants. We say when you join the military, they strip you of your rights. That's not true. But that's how the military is treating their service members. And going back to, you know, the whole illegal order, by their rationale, I could simply order my soldiers to get on a truck, transportation, and go and kill some innocent civilians. And if they say no, then I say, fine, I'll charge you with missing movement, and you'll be found guilty, regardless of why you were getting on the truck. I mean, that's essentially the same rationale that they're using. And there was a Japanese journalist who came up here to interview me. And he won the Japanese equivalent of the Pulitzer. And he also was interviewing other soldiers, other veterans, other war resistors. And he also interviewed General Batiste. And the general, like many military men, did not want to get involved and was just simply condemned me for refusing the order.
That's just amazing. You know, we have so many questions. You can't believe everybody's just clamoring to get questions. Even here in the virtual audience, those who cannot get through. We have a question from Carl Diaz. Actually, it's a twofold question. One, he wants to know where financial support can be sent. And if you could answer that for us. And this is for the court proceedings, I'm sure, are going to be phenomenal. So for those of you that want to send financial support, I believe it's through your website.
Yes. If you go to thankyoult.org, there's a wealth of information. I believe it's been updated continually as quick as they can. And people can make donations to the legal fund and also this public opinion campaign. What's most important for people is if you go beyond the West Coast and Hawaii, very few people around the country know about this case. But people want to know, and people will be supportive. But I think those of your listeners who are supportive and concerned about this case need to be spreading the awareness.
That's what we're doing here tonight, my friend.
Exactly.
That is exactly what we're doing here tonight. There's one more question from Carl, and then we'll take our call-in. Carl asked, when and why did you, Lieutenant Watata, enlist? Can you talk to us briefly about that?
Sure. I enlisted. I guess I get this question a lot because a lot of people will say, well, if you knew about the war, then, you know, and you joined, then you should go. Well, yes, I knew about the war back in March of 2003 when I joined 3.5 years ago. But I was defrauded just like many, many Americans were, including those in Congress. I believed their administration when they said there was an imminent threat that we could be gassed or bombed or nuked any day by Saddam, who had ties to Al-Qaeda, ties to 9/11, who had already attacked us, and he possessed numerous weapons of mass destruction. They knew exactly how many and where. And, you know, this was pounded into our heads day after day after day. This, like I said, it was an elaborate propaganda campaign in order to gain this public support, to play on our fears, to use the 9/11 terrorist attack. And it was very well done, and they got a lot of public support. You know, back in 2003, you could be out there on the street protesting the war, and 9 out of 10 cars would be yelling at you, throwing things at you, or giving you the finger Now, today, it's the exact opposite.
Well, you know, that kind of, just the timing of when you joined the and enlisted discounts any act of cowardice, because you knew that there was a war, you joined, and then you found out that it was what you believe and to be an illegal war. And at that point, you made your decision to do that. I think you're a brave man, and I call you a hero myself. We have another caller. Caller, your name and where you're calling from. Thank you for calling the People Speak Radio. And your question for Aaron.
You're speaking to me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, this is Frederick from Ohio. Mr. Watada, I salute you, by the way, also as a former ROTC trainee. And I congratulate you for doing that following your heart, and I hope you get all the success that you deserve in this life and the next.
Thank you.
If I understood you correctly, and if you could go over this again, the legal trick that they're using against you is not so much that you disobeyed the order to go fight in Iraq, but basically it's the technicality that you disobeyed a minor command to get on a truck or to deploy. Is that basically what's going on here? If you could speak to that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, caller.
Right, that's correct. But you know the article disobeying a lawful order carries a lesser punishment than the article missing movement by design, which carries 2 years. Disobeying a lawful order is 1 year. And as I said before, we are obligated, and we have a right to refuse unlawful orders. And they could have charged me with that, disobeying a lawful order. But then that would allow us to bring in all the evidence and witnesses according to that article into a court of law. And then we would have a chance to debate the war. And they knew that. And that's why they charged me with the latter charge, which they could, because I did miss a movement. But that's really the real technical charge. It's like trespassing. Did you do it or didn't you? It doesn't matter. Very rarely are you allowed a necessity defense. And they're not allowing any necessity defense. They're not allowing any intent or motive. It's simply going to be, did you receive the order? Can we authenticate that? Yes. Did he go? No, guilty, and that's going to be it.
Hello.
Yeah, Aaron. I know that you have to leave. We can. The call is yours. Do you have time for one more question from
sure.
our caller?
Sure. 4 minutes.
Okay. We have. Can we have one more question, caller? Your name and a brief question for Aaron, please.
Okay, Donna from Michigan. I'm calling to see if he knows he's on a chat room and if he agrees, like, with the comments in the chat room. Such as Bush is a fag, Bush needs to be executed, and America needs destroyed. And if he agrees with these comments, and how they could affect his trial.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
We didn't hear you very well, Donna. It's kind of muffled. Could you try to speak up a little bit more?
Okay, I'm calling to see if he knows this is a internet chat room, and if he can see the text, and if he agrees with the comments in the text.
He can't see the text, Donna.
Okay, so he can't see the
comments. Yeah, we're connected through phone lines here.
So, but would he agree with the text, like Bush is a fag and Bush needs executed and America needs destroyed? And how they could affect
his There are a lot of comments, derogatory comments as to our president. This is an international program, Donna. And she wants to know if you agree with any of these statements.
Yeah, you know, I think those kind of
that,
things
that Bush should be hung and.
You know, I don't think those kind of derogatory or inflammatory things help the issue. I think what's important is that we hold our leaders accountable in this country and every country, actually, so that these kind of things, these devastating wars of aggression that kill, that are responsible for pretty much genocide in any way that you call it. Do not ever happen again. And as I said, Vietnam happened, then Iraq happened, because we did not learn the lesson from Vietnam. And it doesn't matter, you know, how we feel personally about these people. They should be held accountable as leaders in our government. And if they are not, if they simply leave office with their millions intact, their millions of dollars and their dynasties intact, and then they go on, people in this country will not learn that valuable lesson to never let this happen again. Neither will any other politician or statesman that comes after this.
Well, thank you very much, Aaron. I know you do have to leave. I just want to tell you that we are behind you during this program. We have been putting in all of your sites, and I know a lot of people are going to be praying for you, including myself, and we're going to do what we can to support you and to spread the message. Thank you for being with us tonight, Aaron.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, too.
You have a good night. For anybody that would like to continue the conversation, you feel free to call our phone lines. I'm still here, and I'll pinch hit. Thank you, Aaron. You have a wonderful evening, and good luck with your next talk. That's where it stands with Lieutenant Aaron Watada, everyone. I think it's an amazing act of bravery that this man has. An amazing act of bravery that this man actually joined the military knowing that there was a war. This wasn't a man that was in the military prior to that and decided that he had to get out because suddenly the going was getting tough. He knew that there was a war. He joined in, thinking it was an ethical war, thinking he was doing his duty as an American citizen, doing what he needed to do in order to protect our country. And what he found was the complete opposite, that this was an illegal war, that many of us believe is an illegal war. And he is brave enough to say that this is what it is, and he's not going to do it. He's not going to be a party to war crimes. And we do have a caller. Hello, caller. Give us your name, please, and where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Mike from California. I just wanted to compliment you on your wonderful interview, Basima. And the questions from the listening audience were very perceptive, maybe except for that last question from that last caller. I didn't quite understand that one.
Well, I think what the caller was concerned about is that our guest was actually in the virtual auditorium and able to witness the text. And some of the text was now I haven't been following the text because I've got a couple of screens up and obviously I have my questions and so it's really difficult to interview and follow all of the text. So I haven't really been seeing it. But obviously there have been some very derogatory comments about our president and she was questioning if he was seeing this, did he agree with this?
Well,
and
I would tell you,
he wasn't.
From listening to this Lieutenant Watada, he sounds like a very patriotic American, and I sincerely doubt he would agree with anybody in this country, including President Bush, being murdered or in any way harmed. So, you know, I thought that was a rather silly question, but what a wonderful show. I support him 100%.
Well, in fact, he said that it was not conducive to... And it wasn't helpful for any, I think, to be lashing out and emotionally on under those kinds of conditions. But it didn't benefit anyone.
Could you give out the chat, the website again for his support? I believe it was thank you.
Thank you, LT, is it?
Yes.
Thank you, LT.
I believe.
I think. Let me look that up here.
Yes.
Naturally, you would get on and try to trip me up on that one, wouldn't you?
There it is. Thankyoult.org.
Thankyoult.org. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Thank you so much. I mean, I appreciated that. Who's next week's guest?
It's our pleasure here. And for those of you that don't know, Mike is the producer of the People Speak
radio. Tell them. Jeez. Okay, well, who is next week's guest, by the way? Thank you so much.
Next week's guest, and don't be so shy, you're doing a great job. We're proud of you. Next week's guest, for those of you that don't know, is the infamous Chevy Chase. He's a comedian, an actor, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Pulitzer for Vixie. I hardly think so. But thank you, my fans. Chevy Chase is going to be with us next week, and it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, sometimes we get really serious in this kind of a program, the People Speak radio show. The original concept of the People Speak was that when the people speak, we make a difference. That's what America is about. That's what I've always known America to be about. That's what I know that the people that are affiliated with this program have always believed, that when we speak and when people like Lieutenant Aaron Watada spoke, where is America now if what we end up doing is suppressing our voices, if we end up suppressing the very people that are supposed to be providing us with this information? You know, we have a lieutenant colonel, that says that he has a limited amount of speech. What kind of limitations? Unless he is, obviously, as I said, if he's interfering with the security of the nation, if he's divulging classified information, I can understand that. But to have a press conference and publicly say that he is refusing, based on this being what he believes to be an illegal war, I hardly think so. I think that's the very reason we have an America, and that was the very reason that this country was conceived. We have another caller. Caller, could you please give us your name, where you're calling from, and hi. Well, folks, that was somehow our caller didn't get through, but I just wanted to let you know that that's it for tonight. This is Vasma Farhat with the People Speak Radio. When the people speak, we make a difference. Support Aaron Watada, Lieutenant Aaron Watada. Spread the word. Tell everybody you know. And thank you very much for being here. And I want to really thank all of our audience for being with us and for all of our callers tonight. You've all been great. You make this show really a great place to be. Thank you very much and good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the table, by the relief of the past, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering how this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is mine, land from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest, the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.